What happens when the picture-perfect couple, living the van life dream, becomes the center of a nationwide manhunt? In the age of influencers and Instagram-worthy adventures, Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie were the couple everyone wanted to be, until Gabby vanished, and Brian came home. Alone. As their curated road trip played out in real time on social media, behind the lens was a powder keg of emotional abuse, isolation, and fear. By the time the truth surfaced, it was too late. America watched it all unravel on live TV, but what we didn't see were the red flags ignored by police, the body cam footage dismissed by officials, and the disturbing final messages Gabby sent from the desert. This isn't just a story about a murder, it's a chilling portrait of manipulation, missed warnings, and the way society glamorizes control as romance, until the bruises show. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Road to Nowhere. The photo that went viral showed a glowing Gabby Petito perched on the edge of a canyon in Zion National Park, hair tied up, smiling into the sun. It was the kind of image that made her followers envious. Freedom, nature, love. Just her and Brian, the man she called her fiancé, living out of a white 2012 Ford Transit van, documenting their dream across national parks and Instagram squares. But dreams distort, especially when they're filtered through control. Gabby, 22, had left her job as a pharmacy technician in Blue Point, Long Island, to pursue full-time van life with Brian Laundrie. They planned the cross-country road trip in July 2021, setting out to document the journey for a budding YouTube channel. To outsiders, it was a fantasy come to life. To those who knew Gabby, the cracks were already beginning to show before they crossed the state line. Her mother, Nicole Schmidt, noticed a change. The daily phone calls became weekly. Texts got shorter. The tone, once giddy, turned robotic. "He's being mean again," one message read. Then silence. They'd been together since high school. On again, off again. Brian was charming, quiet. But he had a temper. He didn't like Gabby talking to strangers. He didn't like delays. He hated when things went off schedule. But Gabby loved him. She believed if she just got it right, he'd be sweet again. They reached Moab, Utah, in August. By then, the tension had boiled over. The body cam, August 12, 2021. A 911 call was made by a concerned bystander. "We drove by and the gentleman was slapping the girl." When police in Moab pulled the van over, the body cam footage would later become a national scandal. In the video, Gabby is distraught, hyperventilating, and attempting to take the blame. "I have OCD," she says, tears streaming. "Sometimes I get frustrated." Brian, calm and cooperative, stands by while Gabby crumbles. Officers separate them, speak to witnesses, and piece together their stories. Yet despite the 911 call, despite visible marks on Gabby, the officers choose not to charge Brian with domestic violence. Instead, they send him to a motel and Gabby back to the van alone. One officer even jokes, "She's just crazy, huh?" No arrest, no warning, no social worker, just a pat on the back and a promise to cool off. The report is filed. The footage is forgotten. Until it's not. Teton Shadows. By late August, the couple had made it to Grand Teton National Park. Gabby continued posting photos, sunset shots, hiking trails, the van parked under a blanket of stars. Behind the lens, though, friends and family sensed something was wrong. The phone calls stopped entirely. Her last Instagram post went up August 25th. That same day, Gabby FaceTimed her mom and mentioned plans to head to Yellowstone. Then, nothing. On August 27th, Gabby's text to her mom read, "Can you help Stan? I just keep getting his voicemails and missed calls." Nicole froze. Stan was her grandfather. Gabby never called him by his first name. It felt off. Cold. Like someone was pretending to be Gabby. The next day, Brian Laundrie walked into his parents' Florida home. Alone. The return. Brian didn't call the Petito family. He didn't report Gabby missing. He didn't answer her friends' messages. 10 days later, on September 11th, Gabby was reported missing by her parents. By then, Brian had lawyered up, When police arrived at the laundry home in Northport, Florida, they were told Brian was unavailable. His parents handed out over their attorney's contact. No interview, no statement, nothing. Brian had driven Gabby's van across the country by himself, parked it in his driveway, cleaned it, and refused to say where she was. There was no sign of Gabby, no call for help, no explanation. The media exploded. Gabby's blonde hair, blue eyes, and tragic romance made her face plastered across every screen in America. People combed through her social media posts for clues. TikTok sleuths dissected her YouTube vlogs. Hashtags exploded. The Find Gabby campaign drew millions. But the person with answers had gone silent, until he vanished, too. The disappearance. September 14th. Brian Laundrie reportedly told his parents he was going for a hike in Carlton Reserve, a 25,000-acre swampy wilderness in Florida. He never returned. 2 days later, police arrived to question him. But he was gone. Not just hiding, missing. Gabby's body was still undiscovered. The only person who knew where she was had slipped away. And his family had waited 3 days to report it. By now, the story had transformed from a missing persons case to something far more sinister. Why hadn't the Laundries cooperated? Why had Brian driven home in Gabby's van and lawyered up? Why had the Moab police not taken the domestic violence report seriously? And most disturbing of all, why was no one arrested? The Canyon. September 19th. A body was found in Bridger Teton National Forest in Wyoming. It was near a campsite known to have been used by Gabby and Brian. The body was consistent with Gabby's description. The coroner later confirmed the worst. It was Gabby Petito. Cause of death, homicide by strangulation. She had been dead for approximately 3 weeks. America's sweetheart had been left in the dirt, decomposing, while her killer drove home, ate dinner with his parents, and went camping. Camping. It was revealed that shortly after Brian returned home, without Gabby, he and his family went on a trip to Fort DeSoto Park, 75 miles from their home. Surveillance and campground records confirmed it. Theories flew. Had they planned his escape? Had they buried evidence? The optics were damning. The silence, deafening. Clues and contradictions. While police combed the wilderness for Brian, a deeper investigation began. Gabby's text mentioning. Stan had raised alarms, possibly sent by Brian pretending to be her. Neighbors claimed to see Brian mowing the lawn and running errands after his supposed disappearance. The Laundries refused to speak publicly, fueling suspicions that they were hiding him. Then came the notebook. The confession. On October 20th, 2021, partial human remains were found near Brian's last known location, Carlton Reserve. Alongside the remains was a dry bag containing a notebook. Dental records confirmed the body was Brian Laundrie. A self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. In the notebook, Brian allegedly confessed to killing Gabby. The FBI released a statement confirming that the investigation had concluded, with Brian taking responsibility in a written confession. But the confession read more like a justification than an apology. He claimed Gabby had fallen and was injured. He said she was in pain, and he ended her life to end her suffering. No one believed him. Not the FBI. Not Gabby's parents. Not the public. Gabby had bruises on her neck. She had fought back. She had been strangled. That wasn't mercy. That was murder. Chapter 2. The Search, the Silence, and the Shovel. The nation had followed every detail of Gabby Petito's disappearance with obsessive intensity. But the ending, Brian Laundrie's suicide, a notebook confession, no trial, left a bitter aftertaste, closure without justice, answers without accountability. The media frenzy quieted, the hashtags slowed, but for Gabby's parents, the nightmare was only just beginning. The psychology of Brian Laundrie. To understand the murder, experts turned to the man who committed it. Brian Laundrie was not a monster in the traditional sense. No prior record, no history of violent outbursts. Just an average guy with artistic tendencies, vegan habits, and a love of hiking. But what began to surface painted a darker portrait. Brian had a pattern of control. Gabby's journal, seized by investigators, revealed a toxic pattern of isolation. Friends were cut off. She often apologized for things that weren't her fault. She cried when she didn't meet his expectations. Former friends described him as manipulative. One ex-girlfriend alleged that he was charming until he wasn't. He'd isolate her emotionally, then love-bomb her. Back into compliance. It was subtle, methodical, and all-consuming. Gabby's parents began referring to it as invisible abuse, and yet the signs had been visible all along. The Moab mistake. The Moab police body cam footage became more than just a viral clip. It became evidence of systemic failure. 2 weeks before her death, officers had pulled over the van. A witness had reported Brian slapping Gabby. The officers failed to arrest or cite him. Instead, they focused on calming Gabby down, assuming she was the aggressor due to her emotional state. Domestic violence experts were horrified. "This is textbook abuse," one said during an NBC interview. "She was terrified of upsetting him. She took the blame. That's not an apology. It's a survival tactic." In retrospect, the video showed a woman begging for help in a way she didn't know how to verbalize, and the people trained to see it didn't. One officer later resigned. The department issued a half-hearted acknowledgement that mistakes were made. But Gabby was dead, and no one was held accountable. The timeline. That haunts investigators use digital forensics, eyewitness accounts, and surveillance footage to reconstruct Gabby's final days. August 24th, Gabby seen leaving Salt Lake City Hotel with Brian. August 25th, final FaceTime call with her mom. Gabby says they're heading to Grand Teton. August 27th, witnesses see Gabby crying at a restaurant. Brian is angry, arguing with staff. August 27th, Stan. Text sent. Likely not from Gabby. August 29th, Brian picked up hitchhiking alone near Coulter Bay. Tells driver Gabby is working on social media, in the van. August 30th, final text from Gabby's phone. No service in Yosemite. Investigators confirm they were never near Yosemite. At some point between August 27 and 29, Gabby was strangled and left in the dirt. Brian drove the van alone, ditched Gabby's remains, and crossed the country as if nothing had happened. The van becomes a crime scene. After Gabby was reported missing, the white van was seized by the FBI. Inside were disturbing clues: a blood-stained mattress, Gabby's backpack shoved under the bed, a digital storage device later found to contain deleted files, but the most chilling find: a hand-drawn map. Brian had scribbled notes about campsites, rest areas, and remote trails. One spot was marked with an X. Investigators believe that was where Gabby's body was eventually dumped. The van, once a symbol of freedom, had become a rolling coffin. And still, Brian never spoke. The search for Brian. After Brian vanished into the swamps, the public turned on the Laundrie family. Why hadn't they reported him missing immediately? Why had they taken him camping just days after Gabby was declared missing? Why hadn't they encouraged him to cooperate? The Laundries refused to answer. Their silence became their signature. Meanwhile, the Carlton Reserve was combed by drones, dogs, and dive teams. It became the most expensive manhunt in Florida history. Then, weeks later, Brian's remains were found in an area that had supposedly already been searched. His parents claimed to have stumbled across a dry bag with his belongings on their own. Skepticism exploded. Many believed the Laundries had hidden him, or at least delayed the inevitable. But with no legal obligation to speak and no criminal charges filed, they walked free. The notebook. Inside the recovered dry bag was Brian's notebook. It had survived thanks to a waterproof cover. In it, he scribbled a chilling confession. "I ended her life because it was merciful. She was in pain. She deserved peace." He claimed Gabby had fallen while crossing a stream and had begged him not to leave her. He wrote that he killed himself, not out of guilt, but grief. No mention of the weeks he spent cleaning the van, seeing his family, or planning his disappearance. Just one final act of control, owning the narrative from beyond the grave. Experts weren't convinced. "The injuries didn't support his story," said the coroner. "She wasn't injured in a fall. She was strangled, manually. That takes time, rage, intimacy." The notebook didn't close the case. It reopened the wound. No trial. No justice. Because Brian was dead, the FBI closed the case. There would be no trial, no cross-examination, no confession under oath, just a notebook and a body. Gabby's parents were forced to turn their grief into advocacy. They established the Gabby Petito Foundation to raise awareness about domestic violence and missing persons cases. They also took legal action. In 2022, the Petito family filed a civil lawsuit against the Laundries, accusing them of knowing Gabby was dead and helping Brian evade arrest. Texts between the Laundrie family and their attorney revealed damning possibilities. A judge allowed the lawsuit to proceed. The Petitos weren't seeking revenge. They wanted truth. The public reckoning. Gabby's case ignited global conversations about how police handle domestic violence calls, how social media distorts reality, how white attractive victims receive disproportionate media attention, known as missing white woman syndrome, and how families of abusers often close ranks, no matter the cost. Gabby's story was a tragedy, but it also became a symbol of silence, a symbol of all the victims who weren't heard, and a chilling reminder of how quickly love can turn lethal. The psychology of silence. Why did Brian do it? Some experts believe it was narcissism. Others say it was fear of losing control. Some point to the murder-suicide fantasy often held by abusers who believe if they can't have their partner, no one can. Whatever the motive, the method was unmistakable. Gabby wasn't killed in a rage-fueled accident. She was strangled, slowly, deliberately. And Brian fled, not out of panic, but calculation. His suicide wasn't remorse. It was avoidance. He never had to face her parents, never had to explain himself. He disappeared into the wilderness, leaving only paper and bone behind. Victim's voice, Gabby's final texts, and the missing 911 call. The final messages from Gabby Petito weren't screams. They were subtle, quiet, just enough to raise the hairs on the neck of those who knew her best. The last texts. Gabby's last confirmed contact with her mother was on August 25, 2021, via FaceTime. She looked tired, but tried to smile. She mentioned heading to Yellowstone. Then came the texts. August 27, 2:47 p.m. Can you help Stan? I just keep getting his voicemails and missed calls. Nicole Schmidt froze. Gabby never referred to her grandfather by his first name. The message felt mechanical, as if someone was pretending to be her. Nicole responded immediately. No reply. August 30th, 5:16 p.m. No service in Yosemite. Gabby and Brian were never near Yosemite. The FBI later determined these messages were likely sent by Brian, using Gabby's phone in a crude attempt to delay suspicion. The forgotten 911 call. Long before Gabby's body was found, long before Brian fled, a witness in Moab, Utah, tried to save her. That witness called 911 on August 12, 2021, the day of the infamous body cam video. We drove by and the gentleman was slapping the girl. The dispatcher asked again. He was slapping her? Yes. And then we stopped. They ran up and down the sidewalk. He proceeded to hit her. Hopped in the car and they drove off. This critical call, clear, concise, unmistakable, was not played for the officers responding that day. They approached the situation blind. By the time Gabby appeared on body cam, crying and apologizing, the truth was already buried under fear and conditioning. Gabby's voice. Gabby Petito didn't die the day she was strangled. She died the moment her fear was mistaken for hysteria. She died the moment a smiling photo became more believable than a bruised face. She died in a country that still doesn't listen when women whisper, "I'm scared." She never screamed on camera. She never accused him on tape. She protected him until her last breath. But her texts, short, robotic, chilling, were the sound of someone fading. Gabby's voice is gone. Now it's ours that must speak,